Hey now, stealing again from Howard Stern, but hey, welcome to the Bipolar Bear Podcast featuring yours truly, Garrett Michael Conklin. Hey, let's get this kicking it off, man. Hey, so today's episode is entitled The End of the Experiments. I think it goes without saying that there is no substitute for the Shure SM7B microphone for podcasting in the way I've been doing this of late. So as much as I'd like to do more frequent podcasting, right now, as things stand, I'm unable to do that because there really isn't a microphone that's really great for remote type of recording. You know, I tried the MV88, which is, you know, like a $150 mic. It's not a piece of junk. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just not designed to have a lot of background and ambient noise. And I can't really for the life of me figure out why they wouldn't just take the technology that's in the SM7B and port it into a smaller platform like that. But that's not what they did. They made it a condenser mic, and that gives it a large capsule, and it gives it this enormous sensitivity, so it picks up everything, which really is terrible, you would think, for your phone and for podcasting in general, because as I started this podcast prior to getting this microphone, I was using a Rode NT1A, which is a full large diaphragm condenser mic, and it sounds amazing. But if you're not in an ISO booth or an isolated room where there's no ambient noise, it just picks up everything. And that, you know, really isn't ideal for things where you're moving in a chair or you're driving in a car, obviously, or there's wind. You know, I have the huge giant muff windscreen on this microphone, so I can have my face literally talk. Like right now I'm talking so close to the mic, it's touching, you know, my lips are touching the actual windscreen or the muff cover that's on top of the mic. But you get the best quality sound that way, and it's the most isolated sound. And with a condenser mic, you get all of the ambient room noise, which is excellent. So for its purpose, I mean, that's wonderful. But if you're not in an isolated room, the condenser mic is just going to be far too sensitive, and it picks up, I mean, it will pick up the computer fans. It will pick up any kind of creaks or noises or any, I mean, you really have to be in an ISO booth to use a traditional large diaphragm condenser mic. And they sound, like I said, they sound wonderful, but they're really, for me, not ideal. MV7B is the mic for me. So I'm just going to continue to do these podcasts as I can on the weekends, and I'll probably shorten the length. Maybe I'll go down to like 15 to 20 minutes. I don't know that that will help my listenership if people want to hear me less, but maybe 30 to 45 minutes is just too much. You know, I'm still trying to get my kind of cadence here on the format and the formula and even the context and the topic, because one of the things that I found that makes this podcast difficult to promote is that it's just a bunch of whining and complaining for the most part. I'm not always really on point with the subject, and I think that makes it difficult to really, I mean, you got to be interested in what I'm saying from a personal perspective, moreover than the context or the topic that I might cover in the podcast, because I don't really have an agenda. And I guess that's kind of a problem. I mean, I bounce from things like EOS to music, to publishing, to business, to complaining about my work, to my family, to, you know, bipolar, to I'm all over the map. So it's very difficult to be successful at this. And I'm starting to realize and uncover why, and this is maybe a good takeaway for you as well. It's, you know, if you listen to what's quite successful out there, the only thing that's not really following a true format is the Joe Rogan podcast. And that's, you can't compare anything to that because that is the freak of nature in the podcast land. I mean, you know, he's grown that over 11 years to what it is today. So he can do whatever he wants. He can have any kind of guest. There can be disparity across the board. He can have, you know, one day it'll be a political discussion. The next day it'll be a biological sciences discussion. Then it'll be like guys getting high, smoking pot on an episode, just talking shit. So it's all kind of all over the place, but that is his format. But he's a one in a, you know, 100 million kind of scenarios that people want to hear what he has to say. And, you know, I got to take some things back that I've kind of trashed Joe Rogan a little bit here and there. And, you know, while I may not agree with him on everything, the guy's actually really, really intelligent and really good at what he does. I mean, that's, you know, obviously that goes without saying. He's wildly successful. You don't need to hear that from me, but The more I listen to him, it's really soaked in how much intellect he's gained from being around such brilliant people for as long as he has been and having these kinds of conversations and just listening to other people talk. He's really, you know, kind of come a long way. I mean, he's still kind of a goofball too when he wants to be, of course, because he's a comedian as well. But I mean, he really has a good head on his shoulders. He has a lot of interesting things to say, and he's immovable. He is an immovable object, this guy. Immutable is what I would call Joe Rogan. He is just Joe Rogan from start to finish, and that's the end of it. Or at least that's the perception you get. Like, he is not, they were talking on an episode the other day about cryptocurrencies and NFTs and things like that. And he's like, I just have no interest in it. And the guy he was talking to, whose name escapes me, was like, but Joe, you know, you're looking at like having value of $5 to $10 million. And he just doesn't give a shit. He's like, I truly have no interest in it. So it's not something I'm going to pursue right now. And maybe at some point I'll have an interest in it and I'll take it up at that point. You know, as you know, I've been kind of messing around with NFTs and I've gotten really into coin, cryptocurrencies and things like that. So I'm wondering where I'm at now. Let me check my crypto right now. I'm kind of addicted to it. So, you know, I'm up like several hundred dollars. And that's tiny, right? I mean, crypto is making millionaires, but for the amount of investment that I've made, I've already made a few $100 and it's only been about a month. So I would highly recommend taking a look at cryptocurrencies. If you're not in a situation where you don't have some disposable income, obviously this is not going to really work out for you. Maybe you can buy $100 worth or something like that. But if you have a bit of play money, and what I've honestly done is kind of shifted my business model as a human being from investing in music and gear and equipment and promotions and things like that, that where I'm just squandering money. And, you know, like as an example, over the last couple of years, I've spent between $6,000 and $8,000 every year on music. And I've made about $30,000 from music. So I guess that's a pretty decent return on my investment. So if I spent $16,000, I made 30. So I have just over a 50% margin there. So that's not bad, right? But that whole train or that whole ship has sailed at this point where, like I've said before, I'm not placing songs on playlists. And I probably just imploded myself on Spotify with my last playlist pitch that was just a complete, you know, an utterance of, hey, you guys suck. You're not doing anything for independent artists. Stop saying you are and just come clean. You know, and I'm not downing Spotify as a platform. I'm downing their public message. They're, you know, stop saying that. You're not actually doing that. You know, you don't take someone that's got 20 million or 15 million or whatever number of streams I have and that's rising and growing and then just drop them. I mean, what the hell is the purpose of that? Where is my motivation to keep doing it? I mean, it's gone, basically. I have no sense in any stretch of the imagination that I'm going to be successful on Spotify. So I really don't give a shit what they do with the stuff. I'm just going to keep putting music out. And as a, you know, from the distributor perspective, of course, they're going to service Spotify. That's one of the biggest streaming platforms on the planet. So that's fine. They can service Spotify. But I don't really look at those numbers anymore. I just don't care because it's meaningless. What's of concern to me is Apple Music, where I've almost caught up to about 1 million streams there. You know, the growth is a lot slower, but hopefully there's more organics involved there and I'll get more actual fans and followers and people that will support my music with or without being on a playlist. I think that would be great. But nevertheless, I've had to kind of move on from this model of like, I'm throwing money out the window that's not making me money. And I'm trying to adopt kind of an approach where the money that I invest or spend or you know, whatever I do with it turns around and actually makes some money. Because the more things that I see on people that I have wealth is that's what they're doing, right? So they're taking, instead of going and buying, you know, a $20 lunch, take that $20 and buy crypto, or take that $20 and invest it in a stock, or invest it in, you know, put it in your 401k, something. Now, look, I am super late to the game. I'm 49 years old, right? Fortunately, you know, I have a high paying job, so I make a good wage, so I can kind of catch myself up, if you will, and take thousands of dollars and invest in things like this and give it a shot. Because quite frankly, like I said, even though the music, yielded an over 50% profit, a greater than 50% margin, my return on investment was actually zero, because all the money that I spent on equipment, and while I gain a lot of personal satisfaction from owning guitars and trumpets and flugelhorns and mouthpieces and all that stuff, there's no value to be placed on personal joy and satisfaction. So I don't, for any, even a fleeting moment, do I regret any of those kind of purchases, because every time I pick up a flugelhorn, it makes me feel great and I get personal calm from that. I just love doing it. I love knowing that I own it. It's kind of like this watch. It's kind of silly, but this $300 bull of a watch that I bought, I just enjoy looking at it. It's a nice timepiece. I'm proud to own it. So to me, that's a good investment and that's not a waste of money. But all the promotion and all that kind of stuff that I did, paying for artwork and all this stuff, nobody gave a shit about it. It didn't gain me any followers. It didn't make me any money. So it was, in my mind, a complete loss, which is how it was treated when I filed my taxes. It was a total loss. And that's what my business is right now, unfortunately, a total loss. I guess that's kind of par for the course. But my underlying piece of advice to everyone is get out there and take a look at what's going on, right? There are a lot of things going on with NFTs and, I've been looking at CSOL and all these different, there's a lot of different platforms. One of the guys at work showed me something, I forget what it's called, but it's like Starfish or something. I don't know. It's like an online world, kind of like Half-Life or Second Life or whatever that was from years ago. But now that NFTs and this strange approach to purchasing digital art and digital objects that are intangibles, I guess, if you'd call it the investment in intangible. And to be clear, that's not really that odd off the beaten path. I mean, if you think about it, our financial system, even the traditional dollar system, is a complete farce. There's not actually trillions of dollars sitting anywhere. It's just in databases, right? It's in ledgers. It's just that the physical money doesn't exist. And even if it physically did, it's just a piece of paper that, years ago was stopped being backed by anything of actual physical and tangible value, like gold, silver. We're not on those standards anymore. So it really, money, no matter how you look at it, even if you want to fight crypto and all this and don't, no, it's not this, it's not that, you can't deny the fact that what we're doing anyway is the same thing. It's just you get a piece of paper, and in crypto, you get nothing but a bank balance or a cryptocurrency balance. But theoretically, if I look at the way I interact with my own finances, my work pays me through direct deposit. I never see a check. I never see cash, nothing. It just goes from their digital record of ledger to the banks, to my bank as a digital record, a digital credit. So just because it's not called cryptocurrency and it's not backed by a blockchain and done in that technological manner, it's still in technology. So it doesn't really exist. I can't, I can go take out money, physical dollars from the bank, just as I can cash out my crypto into physical dollars if I want to do that. So there's really no difference. So I think people really shouldn't be afraid of cryptocurrencies and what they are and like how strange it is. It is a weird concept. I'll give you that. It's definitely not really a straightforward approach to anything. I mean, if you're not in tech, this could be potentially a strange kind of a, what the hell is it? But anyway, getting back to this, I mean, there's sites that are starting to pop up now where you can go buy digital assets, like spaceships and space stations. And, they're creating these digital worlds that people are going to start to literally live in through investment and money and the acquisition of real estate. And it's starting to sound really familiar, if you think about it, to the episode I did, days, whenever it was, when we were talking about the transference of consciousness. So is this really and truly the beginning of building this, whatever this ethereal universe is going to be? Because this particular game deals with the entire universe. And you can be anywhere and do anything, be anything, create characters, create ship, all this stuff is available for purchase and it's kind of just getting off the ground. So I was looking at it, I'm like, maybe I should be an early investor in something like this because you can still buy some assets for a pretty affordable price. I'm not quite sure I'm there yet, and I'm ready for that because it's still a bit of a conundrum. Word of the day. There it is. Conundrum on how any of this translates into anything just yet, from a sense of value. So it would literally be just throwing hundreds of dollars out the window, just hoping that something turns, you know, comes of this. But I think the most interesting component of it is that it really feeds into the previous thought that I had, where if we figure out a way to digitally transfer consciousness, I mean, I'm assuming this will work with virtual reality and things like that, but that's pretty clunky still. It's not as awesome as it could be. It's not like you're plugging the cable into the back of your head like the Matrix. So, you know, you got to take it for what it's worth today. But I could see in like 5 or 10 years, if this model starts to really prove to continue to be as profitable and insane as it has been over the last few years, with the example of cryptocurrency, then these digital assets or these, you know, NFTs will be something real. And I think, again, you'll go in there and you'll be able to get a job. You can set yourself up to work in this virtual environment and earn credits, right? Earn cryptocurrency, real cryptocurrency, while you're performing tasks or doing jobs or performing services. And very much not unlike life, except potentially this could be the end game for like, okay, now you've built a bit of an estate here. Now you can move your consciousness at some point in the future. You'd be able to move yourself rather than just expire and die and move on like normal. You would be able to take your consciousness out of your physical biological body and transfer it for a number of cryptocurrencies or for a price, of course, because nothing's free still. And that's one of the tragic flaws of all these things. But nevertheless, for a price, in this, again, this is not like an idea that I had. This is something that was in Black Mirror. They literally did this. When you died or you're sick or terminal with an illness, you had the option to just expire and pass away as a normal person would have in the past, or you could have your consciousness transferred to the grid and live in an environment like this, conceptually, for as long as you'd be able to afford it. So yes, you'd go into this thing and you'd have to work and do this, but theoretically your time could be unlimited. And I think that's, I mean, I'm getting kind of giddy about that because I think that's such a cool concept to really explore and, you know, and that would kind of get rid of, like I've said before, our requirements for, are we damaging and destroying the planet? Because at some point this thing would not require the sustenance that a biological entity requires on the planet. It would be ultimately turned over where AI runs this whole, we'd literally become the Matrix, you know, but except we wouldn't be prisoners in this biological body sitting in some fluid-filled pod with all this crap stuck into us. We would be able to transfer our consciousness out of our physical body, therefore not having the same biological requirements anymore, and we would just exist in these new worlds. And you know, at that point, I feel like that's nirvana or utopia, because you could do things that are literally godlike at that point, right? I mean, if you're in a simulated environment where you have the ultimate control over doing whatever you want to that environment, that's not really that far-fetched, right? It's not that unlike what we're doing right now in our personal worlds, where you're only really constrained by the amount of money that you make in terms of what you're able to do as a human being, other than the static constraints, meaning life and, you know, the duration of time that you have to exist and illness and disease and things like that. But theoretically, other than, I guess you could argue viruses and things like that, you know, that would exist in the digital realm, you wouldn't have anything to worry about in terms of time. Everything would be predicated on, you know, whatever it is that you perform as a service. And typically the services would be oriented towards supporting the system itself. So it would truly be a collective unity of all things, because everyone would have to do their part to ensure that the system itself, this really doesn't, as I start to think and uncover this, it really doesn't sound that much different than what we're doing now. Like, you know, I go to work and I contribute taxes and I do this and I do all these civic, you know, my civic duties and all, so that I can contribute to the greater good of everything in the United States or all mankind, whatever it is. We all have, you know, varying functions in society that kind of lead us down this path. So what would be the difference? The difference would be that you would be in a digital domain rather than a physical domain. But again, the way that our brains work is that we're only really processing what's coming in through our five senses, if in fact you have all five senses, right? So, I mean, think of the repercussions of this on someone that currently has medical issues, like they're blind, they're deaf, they're in a wheelchair, they're quadriplegic, you know, they have cerebral palsy, they have some pretty significant physical disability that prevents them from living a normal life, or at least a traditionally normal life. Imagine now a person like that being able to transfer into a world like this where all of that is gone, because the biological constraints that they are dealing with and the failures of their current system are gone. So you're getting a fresh everything. Now you want to manifest as a human being? Awesome. You could be an alien. You could be an animal. You could be, you know, and I believe that the whole thing would be evolutionary based on what you were able to purchase with cryptocurrency, you know, with real and actual blockchain. You could do whatever you wanted. And I know that, of course, there's going to be corruption. And, you know, as soon as you introduce a system, a monetary system into anything, you're going to have people that want it all and want to control it and want to run it. And the only reason I'm not really addressing that is because none of the technology and the advancements that we're making in technology seem to give a shit about dealing with that. We're not trying to get away from money. We're trying to do different things with money and make money in different ways and manifest value in different ways. We're not trying to stop the use of money and just give everything to everybody for free and become equivalent, because I don't think people and human beings have evolved to a level of real and true equivalency. People don't want that. I want to have more than you. I want to buy this. I want to buy that, because the whole conundrum, word of the day again, is this, you know, the piece of freedom in that you're free to choose and think whatever the hell you want. So if you decide you want a Ferrari, well, you can have a Ferrari if you've got $200,000, you know? So I don't think that something like that would change in a realm like this. I think that at least at the onset, it would stay the same. But I think what will happen is the idea of time no longer being a constraint or a tangible for most people, or for all people, for example. Like, let's say you just got, you know, by default, by entering into the system, you get 100 years of time by default. And then if you contribute and earn and do all this other stuff, you know, you can earn your way into another century and you know, perpetuate your existence based on your contributions and all that kind of stuff. But if you were to start off with giving everyone the ability to do this for 100 years, you would eliminate the need and the pressures of, and I guess arguably the animosity or the negativity that comes with the pressure of time, right? What are we always trying to do? Well, I got to earn more now. I want this right now. You wouldn't need to be anything right now, because you have now, you know, a century of time to achieve what you're trying to achieve. So think about the things that could actually be achieved if they didn't have to be driven by financial requirement and they weren't constrained by time. If you had an unlimited amount of time to think about something and work on something, like I was saying before, if I had the next 100 years where all I had to do was contribute to society in some way in this digital realm so that I could perpetuate my existence and help my children and things like that, just like I'm doing now. But all I really had to do, because my biological needs would no longer be a requirement, all I would do was play the flugelhorn. You know, I would ultimately pursue the thing that pleases me most and just do music. And I would be able to stop worrying about, well, does music make me money? Because I need money, because I need health insurance, because I have physical ailments. You wouldn't need that anymore. Now, I guess as I say these things, I'm arguing in my own head, like, well, of course they're going to design the system where you're going to need to continue to make money and contribute to it so that you have to pay for getting rid of malicious code and malicious actors and viruses and things that are going to fuck up your existence in this plane of existence, I guess, if you will. But I think it would eventually get boring enough. And I think we need to reach this point. And this is why our civilizations have not evolved to this yet, is that we don't live long enough to finally get bored with all of the bullshit that we're doing every day throughout our lives to achieve things that mean nothing. We're not actually working towards some ultimate goal, and we're not working collaboratively and through communications and good actions, because we're in it for ourselves. I mean, if I've been looking at, you know, the current company that I work for and trying to solve for some of the issues that exist there, I mean, one of the most outstanding issues probably in any organization is the toxic culture that exists. People that are just not on board, and they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and they're spending more time creating drama and causing negative debate and, you know, counter productivity rather than doing what they should be doing and just doing the work. But I think if we get rid of the requirement, again, of time, even in a microcosmic scenario like that, where 8 hours of your day is spent at this place, so you're trying to make it as possible or as positive as you can. Some people find that creating drama and causing problems makes things better, but holistically, I think given a long enough timeline, all people will arrive at the same conclusion that this is ridiculous. Why would we waste our time doing this? But again, we don't have an unlimited time to come to these realizations for ourselves. So trying to force people into these states of realization is very difficult, if not impossible, right? I mean, how successful have you been converting someone just by saying, this is the right answer, do it, when they're diametrically opposed to what you're saying? It just doesn't happen, right? They don't find the same value in it that you, because they're in a different place mentally. And evolutionarily, I'm not sure that's a word, but it sounded like a good word, and I said it, so yay. They're just not in the same place as you might be, or I might be. And vice versa. You know, I mean, someone that's made $100 billion in their life has been exposed to things that I have not. So therefore, they have a different set of life experiences, and they may have a different take on what is the right thing to do or not. So I can't really debate a guy like Bill Gates, because I have no frame of reference from where and what that guy has seen and experienced in his life. I'm not a billionaire, so I don't know what that comes along with and what things you're exposed to and what kind of information and you know, things that you get to see that I don't. I haven't reached a point where I have so much money that buying stuff is nauseating to me, because I just don't care anymore. What else could I possibly buy? You know, it's like any game, if you play it and you've mastered the game, arguably I would say billionaires have mastered the game of life, you know, at least from a financial perspective. I mean, at that point, the game gets kind of boring. You know, like I strive for like, wow, one day it would be great to own a Monette trumpet. That would be really cool. But I don't have $35,000 to just squander on something like that. Yeah, a guy that's got, or a person that's got billions of dollars doesn't have that discussion in their brain. They just buy it. Because it's almost meaningless. I mean, 30 grand to somebody that's got $100 billion is not even something you'd see. It's like pennies to me. That's the equivalence, right? If I were to spend 5 cents, I literally will just throw 5 cents out the window. Who gives a shit? It doesn't matter. So when you reach these extraordinary levels of financial success, it's the same thing. It's just with huge sums of money. Millions of dollars mean nothing. It doesn't even compute. They have to give it away because of the taxing systems and it's meaningless. So when you reach that point, I think that that's going to change fundamentally who you are as a person, no matter who you are as a person, if that makes any sense, right? You're going to be a different person because you've now been exposed to something that's so wildly different than anything you've been exposed to before. You now just don't have the same constraints. There is nothing you can't have from a physical, acquisition perspective. It's just the sky is literally the limit. You want a plane? Go buy a plane. You want another plane? Go buy another plane. You want an airport? Buy the whole airport. You want a sports team? Buy the whole sports team. You know, I mean, where I'm like, oh, I like that jersey, but it's $75. I don't know if I can afford that. That just doesn't compute when you've reached these points. So my point is that if we evolve as a society into some kind of transference of consciousness into a digital realm, maybe that finally goes away, because the one thing that's not in anyone's control, whether you're mega rich or mega poor, either extreme, is time. We have no control over how long we're going to live to some degree. You are eventually going to pass away. No matter how rich you are, and no matter how many resources you have at your disposal, you will not live forever. But if we get into a scenario where your consciousness lives on forever or has that capacity, imagine, I guess both, there's a dichotomy there, right? I guess imagine how bad that could be or get because of all the creative insanity that might take place. But also, I like to choose to look at how amazing that would be, where you finally realize true utopia or true nirvana, where you can actually do and spend the time with your consciousness doing the things that are most important to you, like spending time with your family and your loved ones and your children and things like that, where, you know, I have to sacrifice my time now and I have to approach it as a sacrifice. And that's truthfully one of the primary reasons I'm dissatisfied with my current job, because I actually like it, but it takes too much of my time away from my time with my family. I don't like not being home for 8 to 10 hours a day. Well, actually, it's without question 10 hours a day, because as I've explained, my ride in is nearly an hour one way. So I'm spending almost 2 hours just driving my car, which is fine. I like my car. Like I've said, it's nice RAV4 Prime, cool hybrid little thing. I dig it. But it's for the most part, an enormous waste of my time that I cannot get back, that is just something I'm apparently willing to sacrifice for this job, which I do like the financial component of the job that I have. And I do like, for the most part, the challenges that I'm faced in this position, but I'm still looking, because there's something that's just not fulfilling enough or compelling enough from a financial perspective or from a task-oriented perspective that's making me not continue to search for something else. And it's all got to do with time. Time is such a critical thing in all of our lives that we seemingly just throw away all the time. Ha, pardon the pun. I don't mean to continue to use the word time there, but you know what I'm saying? Like right now, I don't know if this is in any way a good use of my time, but I'm spent 32 minutes so far talking about stuff that I find interesting, but is there any value in anything that I'm saying here to anyone else? I don't know. Probably not. You know, I would argue that who gives a shit what I say? I'm just noise. I'm just some guy doing a podcast. Who gives a shit what I have to say? You know, I had to come to that realization not that long ago that I'm actually, you know, from Tyler Durden from Fight Club, you know, I'm not a unique snowflake. I'm just a part of the compost heap. I'm not really a special person. And that's a difficult thing to kind of sincerely take in and digest and accept that. Yeah, I love doing music. That doesn't mean that it's any good or that I'm spectacular or that I'm even talented. Just because I love doing it does not mean that I have a gift to give to the rest of the world. It's just something that I love to do. Now, take that in for a minute. I mean, I'm basically imploding my entire existence, because that's what I want to do. That's what I want to make money at. That's what I want to be successful doing. Same with the podcast. I love doing this. I really enjoy having these kind of monologues and sharing this kind of knowledge that I have. But it doesn't mean just because I'm doing it that the people are going to be attracted to it and be excited by it and enthralled enough to follow it and support it and make it into something bigger than it is today. I may very well just be a regular old schmo and that's what it is. And I just happen to be shooting my mouth off, but that doesn't mean that anything that I'm saying is in any way special, unique, extraordinary, you know, life-changing, life-altering, none of that. It's just a bunch of crap coming out of my mouth. And I've had to really kind of come to terms with that. And it, quite frankly, has not been very easy. But that realization, I think, was a big milestone for me, because for a very long time, I thought that I was being slighted. And I was being given the short end of the stick. And you'll hear this pop back up when I talk still. I'm still going to whine and complain like a little baby because I didn't get what I wanted or I didn't achieve the goal that I set forth. That's really no one's fault but my own. You know, I may not be the special snowflake that I think that I am. You know, I'm just another one that hit the ground and somebody stepped on it and nobody gives a shit. There's billions of those, right? You would argue that the majority of people out there, not to diminish anyone individually or anyone collectively, but not everyone really has something meaningful to give back to everyone that matters. And I could very well be one of those people that just because I can record music and play an instrument or play many instruments and write songs, it doesn't mean they're any good. It doesn't mean people will like them. Now, of course, the flip side, it doesn't mean they won't and that I'm not. But you have to look at both sides of these things and balance the equation, if you will, because that's the only logical way to approach these things, right? Otherwise, you're going to be miserable all the time, like I seemingly am, in that I feel like I'm not being given an opportunity and I'm not getting these chances to succeed and everybody's against me and fuck Spotify and all this blah, 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 whatever it is. Oh, I don't get the right job. I don't have the right kind of control. You know, all these things that kind of cloud, well, not kind of, but completely shroud and cloud your viewpoint from being positive because you're just so negative. And what I guess I'm saying is that it all could be for naught because it's just not who I am as a person, that what I have to contribute isn't really that special. You know, I like to think it is. My own ego is so big and out of control that I like to think that, oh, what I'm contributing is so valuable and why is it not successful? Well, you could also argue that the reason it's not successful is because, in fact, it isn't valuable, right? It is not something that's universally what people want. They don't want to hear this. You know, maybe what I'm contributing is not of importance to anyone but a small group of people. So I have to kind of reframe my expectation, and I think this is important to do for nearly everything in your life, to what is in fact reality. And I'm not saying stop dreaming and, you know, conceiving new ideas and striving for goals at all. I'm saying that you need to also have a sense and a balance of realism and a realistic approach to what is the reality of your situation. I have a podcast where it tells me a handful of people listen to this thing. You know, I make $20. I've made $20 in total since I've started doing this, whenever it was. You know, what does that mean? In 5 years, maybe this will have become successful or never. So I guess you have to get down to the basics and just do the things that really compel and move you and inspire you as a person, moreover than trying to turn it into something financial. And that's, I mean, ultimately I'm doing that, right? So I continue to write music, record music, release music. I continue this podcast. None of the stuff that I've just mentioned is successful financially. So I have to continue to have a job that is less rewarding to me than if I were able to do these jobs. Because what I'd really like to do is make enough money off of music and make enough money off of podcasting that's what I do for a living. And I can support my family in a meaningful and comfortable manner that's acceptable for our little unit here. Doesn't have to be millions of dollars. Doesn't have to be wild fame. None of that. Just has to be somewhat equivalent to what I'm doing now. And really the biggest part of that isn't even the money, it's the health insurance. And again, that goes back to what I was talking about with the simulated environment is that, you know, I spend, you know, easily $25,000, $30,000 a year on health insurance and medical expenses. You know, I mean, that's just a fact. So at a minimum, I have to make enough money to cover that and have some kind of insurance so that my family can remain alive is, you know, the bottom line on that. I have to take medications that if I stop taking them, I run a high risk of dying. My daughter had seizures. We have to take medicine for that. It's, you know, we have to go to the doctor to get that stuff checked and looked at and followed up on, you know, all these things. They're not free for me. I guess if you, you know, fall into the welfare system, then that kind of scenario, everything just gets paid for, I would suppose. But I don't think that's the answer either. So I'm just supposed to do nothing and make no money and I don't know that that's really in line with any of my objectives in life, nor do I want that to be something my kids take up, and nor do I think that that system should be something you rely on in that way. It should be for people that need help for a short period of time to get back on their feet because of some unforeseen circumstance, and that's what it's for, period. It's not this, you know, career politician scenario where you're in office for 50 years or your entire life you've been on welfare. And I'm not downing people. Hey, if you've had trouble in your life, I understand, but how can you have trouble in your life for 20 or 30 years unless you're fully handicapped in some way where you literally can't do anything? But then I always go back to Stephen Hawking. How did that guy in the situation that he found himself later in his life and for at least half of his life where he was fully incapacitated, how does somebody like that not argue for, well, anything is possible if you really have the will and desire and drive to do it? I mean, that guy has outachieved anything I'll do in my life, and he couldn't move anything but an eyeball, it seems, toward the end, right? So that's a difficult argument claim to hold on to, you know, and to die on that one is a difficult, that it's just hard for me. Maybe it's not for you, but that's a hard one for me. That guy had everything going against him, and yet he was one of the most brilliant minds of our time and didn't want to give up, even though, and worse yet, it's not like he was born like that. The guy had a regular life for like 25 years. So he went into that catatonic state physically. Can you imagine what that must be like? Because you know that you want to move, you know what moving and being active feels like, and now you just can't do it. I cannot even imagine in my mind what that struggle would have been like. So what a genius of a person just to be able to be contributory in any way. Not only being a leading cosmologist or maybe the leading cosmologist of our generation, but being in any way contributory to anything and not just sitting there feeling sorry for yourself and wanting to off yourself every day. And now, who knows? Maybe he felt that way too, but just was able to control it, manage it. I don't know. I don't know that much about it. But as an example of someone that had everything that a normal person has and then lost 99% of that other than their mental capacity and still remained an enormous contributor to society and mankind in general. I mean, holy shit. How do you not put that guy up on a pedestal and go, yeah, well, I mean, anything's possible. How do you sit around and just collect money on welfare and be a complete pile of shit and do nothing when you're perfectly healthy and can go do something? And yet this guy who could do almost nothing by himself without the aid of technology and other people was this, you know, enormous influence on the world. That's a tough argument. Anyway, I don't know where I'm going. I think I'm off track at this point. So let's clip it at the wings. Have a good weekend. As always, if you dig the podcast, share it, please. That would be awesome. Give me 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you can give feedback on that. Or if you think it sucks, that's fine too. But hey, thanks for listening as always, and I'll talk to you soon.